This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I would like to dedicate today's talk to Renzen Barbara Verkylam, who is a Dharma sister, or a Dharma friend of mine in Madison, Wisconsin, who passed recently. The last time I saw Barbara was at the opening of Mike Newhall's art show and art installation in Milwaukee. And, and so when being with Barbara was like, you just sort of dropped in and you were right where you left off. And she and I shared an interest in the bilateral brain. What are you reading? Ian McGilchrist. Oh, okay. So, and then we sort of plotted out a plan then to see if we could join forces to explore this bilateral brain. And so I'll carry your spirit with me as I pursue this. So some time ago, I was reading Awakening Body by Reginald Ray, who's he, seems to be in the Vajrayana world anyway. Interest in really tuning into the body dynamic in practice. And he's been at this for a good while now. Caveat here, Reginald Ray did get in trouble with his Sangha for emotional abuse. But it's, it's how do we parse out somebody's teachings? When I was reading one of his books, he shared his history, and when I read about this situation and his response to it, it made all sense in the world to me. But still, is as much as he's worked with it, part of the shadow coming up, and then how that affects, influences, harms a community. But I came across this, which basically set me on this trajectory. Our left brain is typically described as hosting our conscious self, our ego, or our ego mind. It is often said to be characterized by the three L's. It is linear, logical, and linguistic. It is the seat of discursive thought. As such, it is a more or less disembodied, autonomous, closed system, cycling and recycling already existing information that exists in its database in the form of memories, ideations, labeling, judgments, and conceptual abstractions of all sorts. It houses the function of language, both spoken and written. As a seat of our ego consciousness, it carries out executive, managerial, and coping functions. So I want to highlight that right now. Not surprisingly, the left brain is neurologically the most far removed from our body and its direct perceptual experience. I want to highlight that too. A fact that can be seen both experientially and anatomically. So, seen experientially, I would say experienced experientially. The left brain is not an originator or a source. How's that for us big brain people? It is a processor. It cannot feel, sense, or experience anything directly. And it is connected to the right brain by only a few neurological pathways. Our right brain, by contrast, is our physical, emotional self. It is deeply grounded in our body and is all about our direct, unmediated, and non-conceptual experience. It beholds things within a field of infinite silence and space, without any judgment or evaluation, without any discursive processing whatsoever. So these lines here we'll come back to as we turn into the chant we've been chanting this. It receives experience of this moment in its totality, without any boundaries or filtering. It is like a mirror that simply reflects. Is anybody that ringing a bell with somebody? Jewel mirror somebody? The neuroscientist and stroke survivor, Joe Volpe Taylor, explains that the right brain takes things as they are and acknowledges what is in the present. Everything is there as in a collage. And the interconnections of everything are seen. Lacking conceptual reference points, the right brain has no sense of past, present, or future. This moment is experienced as timeless. How can you not read that and not hear a lot of our sutras just start lighting up in your brain? Wow. Our ancestors were onto something here. They had it. So, it took me a while. I'm kind of slow in some ways. Maybe it's stubborn. My wife says both. Sometimes she says that. So I went to Ian McGilchrist first, and the master and his emissary. It's kind of dense. And then I was talking to Barbara last September, and she said, I started on the master and his emissary, and I was aware of the book because, I'm a bookaholic. It's an addiction for me. I'll admit I have an attachment to these things. And so, but I was looking at it was a two-volume set for $160. And she says, you can get it on Kindle, but I don't do Kindle. So I broke down and got it and have just started into it. But in the Master and His Emissary, it pretty well lines it. Everything is, and then I went to Joe Bolte Taylor, right? And after the Master and His Emissary, and it's lining up for Reggie Ray. What he describes is pretty accurate. This is from Whole Brain Living by Joe Bolte Taylor. When my character one, and this will become clear here a little bit, and she breaks things down into character one, two, three, and four. Then my character one, left brain or left thinking cellular network was incapacitated. I could no longer identify the boundaries of where I began and where I ended. I have to say that even as a neuroanatomist, I had never been taught there was a group of cells in my brain that did all that. With those cells offline, I perceived myself to be a gigantic ball of energy that blended fluidly with the rest of the energy in the universe. I felt so vast that I believed I would never be able to squeeze the enormousness of myself back into inside this tiny little body. As you might imagine, one part of me found this shift in my awareness amazingly insightful and exciting. While my character one, the left brain thinking, would have judged this loss of my ego to be self-degrading if it had remained functional enough to ponder this idea. In addition to not being able to perceive the boundaries of where I began and ended, my left brain could no longer ascertain the edges of boundaries between anything else in the external world. As a result, I experienced myself as fluid, in flow with the energy of everything en masse around me. This shift in perception is possible because our left brain is designed to perceive differences and separation at the level of things, rather than at the subatomical level of the particles that make up those things. The latter is the realm of what we call our unconscious mind, the territory of our right brain. Besides the ability to differentiate between things, somewhere along the line, our left brain manages to manifest both an identity and a consciousness. Without writing a dissertation, for our purposes, I will define consciousness for the left brain as an awareness of itself and its relationship with the external world. The loveliest part of losing my left brain emotional character too, which we will talk, won't go into, was the complete absence of anger and fear. Without any of the left brain memories from my past overshadowing the present moment experience of my right brain, I shifted into a state of blissful euphoria. Of course, as tantalizing as this experience was, the absence of my left brain character rendered me literally half-witted, and I could not function in the real world. In her recovery, she says, as this left thinking character one regained its ability to process information linearly, as well as to judge things as right, wrong, or good or bad, I recouped the ability to experience emotions that were dependent upon a memory from another place and time. For example, we have the ability to feel guilt or shame in response to something that has already occurred. Or we can build up resentments over time or seek revenge for something that has happened in the past. Once the emotional module of my left brain healed enough to come back online, I could experience these kinds of emotions again. But just as a strict and productive character one came back online with my left brain thinking tissue, a pained and cautious character two came back online with my left brain emotional cellular network. I will admit that I truly enjoyed not having any of the pain from my past in my left brain emotional module anymore, as I did not miss those tragic emotional circuits of my childhood. Yet, having said that, life without the richness of deep emotions is a flat place to exist. Hope you're not getting tired of going up.
Wow.
And Jill did this.
Sorry.
It's gonna be important because it doesn't have to breathe. Jill did this nice thing of creating lists with which Buddhists like. And so it reminded me, you know, we have the five hindrances, right? And then we have the five awakening or seven awakening factors. And we have these other lists. And I think of these lists as like guideposts to help us begin to, oh, so there's five hindrances, attachment, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness, worry, skeptical doubt. And so they're guideposts. So we, you know, you're sitting, you're on your cushion, you're going, and you might be, oh, you begin to recognize, oh, there's aversion right there. Or sloth and torpor. I think remind me to come back to sloth and torpor and meditators. Okay. I think sloth and torpor is kind of common among meditators, you know. Begin to recognize them. Oh, sloth and torpor. Oh, there's restlessness and worry. Oh. We're becoming intimate with ourselves. A helpless dance practice helps us become intimate with ourselves. You know, oh, there are these thoughts right now. Oh, you know, oh, why am I doing this? What's the use? And then, you know, oh, and then, and, you know, so we bring, you know, Dogen's light to them. You know, the Dogen's light is brought to them. And, oh, okay. So, Michael, you have a good voice. What I would like you to do is to go down these lists for us, for the people who might be listening in. As we, you know, Bolte Taylor has broken things down, you know, in her sense, from her experience. Now, this is, you know, it's kind of like the Buddha's experience, right? She had this experience. She didn't ask for this. Nobody asked for a stroke, brain aneurysm. But she had, and she said, and she said she was able to capture all this in a way because the left brain didn't shut down immediately. And it was a gradual process for her. The aneurysm was in the left brain. And then when she, and things started, and so there was a memory thing, you know, being happening in the brain. And so she could, and then when she, things came back online, she could begin to reconnect with this. So there's left thinking and right thinking. And then the second page, right emotional. Left thinking, right thinking, left emotional, right emotional. And so, Michael, what I would like for you to do, if you would please, is sort of bounce, you know, start on one, and it's like on left thinking and right thinking, go from verbal to nonverbal, just sort of back and forth down the list.
Verbal, nonverbal, thinks in language, thinks in pictures, thinks linearly, thinks experientially, past future based, present moment based, analytical, kinesthetic slash body, focuses on details, looks holistically at big picture, seeks differences, seeks similarities, judgmental, compassionate, punctual, lost in the flow of time, individual, collective, concise, precise, flexible, resilient, fixed, open to possibilities, focused on me, focused on we, busy, available, conscious, unconscious, structure and order, fluid and flow.
They're willing to do the actions. From left emotional and right emotional.
Constricted, expansive, rigid, open, cautious, risk-taking, fear-based, fearless, stern, friendly, loves conditionally, loves unconditionally, doubts, trusts, bullies, supports, righteous, grateful, manipulates, goes with the flow, tried and true, creative and innovative, independent, collective, selfish, sharing, critical, kind, superior, inferior, equality, right and wrong, good and bad, contextual.
So, as her experience was, that when one shut down, when the left shut down completely, she wasn't able to function. You know, I'm gonna come back to this. If somebody hand me a chat book. This has the, you know, the start of the Genjo Koan. When all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma, there is illusion and enlightenment. There is practice, there is birth and death. There are ordinary beings and there are Buddhas. I'm kind of puzzled by this translation, when all things are Buddha Dharma. The translation that I've worked with out of the Moon and the Dewdrop is, as all things are Buddha Dharma. As all things are Buddha Dharma. There is illusion and enlightenment, there is practice, there is birth and death, there are ordinary beings, and there are Buddhas. And right there in that sentence, Dogen sums it all up. And then he says, you know, and he goes on to say that even with recognizing this, still we begrudge the falling of a flower and are dismayed by the flourishing of weeds. And the translation that I'm familiar with, you know, in attachment, flowers fall, in aversion, weeds spread. And then he goes on into the part about, this is a completely different translation than I'm used to, but the one I'm used to says, to carry ourselves forward. So in this dynamic, thank you. In this dynamic, is how, you know, it's you know, the rising of Dharma, you know, this is how the human being is, has evolved. Okay, so there's no judging one or the other, it's just becoming more and more aware what trips us up, what keeps us from being intimate. To bring into awareness. So in Buddhism, you know, they talk about the, you know, the three process of learning, reading and writing, listening, reading, listening, and then, you know, contemplating, and then sitting with it. And you know, so right now we're in this process, but that begins, you know, all of that is to inform what's happening in our in our practice, in our, you know, in our connection with ourselves, you know, is all okay. And so, you know, the more familiar we might get with this, I seem to, you know, it's kind of, you know, what you know, how tires get out of a line, out of alignment. You know, oh man, the judgmental thing is really working here. And what's happening with that? Bolte Taylor said that, you know, she talks about making a choice, being, you know, this experience has now made it possible for her to make a choice. And she realizes that when her left brain dynamic is on, left brain thinking and emotion are really at play, she's named that Helen. And when she really becomes familiar with Helen, I won't tell my friend Helen downstate that, but you know, she goes, oh. And it doesn't take her over. I mean, this really changed her life. She, you know, she was a high-powered neuroanatomist at Harvard from Southern Indiana. And now she, you know, she was, and her whole set of priorities changed from this experience. And it's, you know, so, and I've heard, you know, examples yesterday of how this practice is doing that for folks. And I, you know, so, but how we take it in and inform our practice. And for me, you know, it's, but we tend to gauge by the left. Which has the most limited perception. So that's what I'm encouraging is how do we begin to listen and to experience self differently, be more attuned, because I think we come, you know, our society, our culture, and for a long, long time has been predominantly left. How we're taught, We're encouraged to push through, right? To ignore body and the suffering that that causes. And then in our algorithm, you know, it's all algorithm, but it's you know, we practice the dynamic. What you know, they just didn't have the word back then, but what the practice lights us up to is our own algorithm. But we're, you know, the dynamics of our culture, our society, and our technology are really amping that up. We're becoming tone deaf, really tone deaf. And so this practice is so beautiful, and not always, but it's not always painless, because as Ajahn Buddhadasa, a Thai master, said, Buddhism is life. It's nothing other than life. It's not an escape from life. It helps us dance with life. I get one of those moments. But how do we listen? How do we tune? You know, listen, it's tuning us, and then the tuning, the attuning. But there's different listening that goes on. Came back to it. So in the practice it will help with anxiety, stress, and depression, I think. But that's not all. You know, there is something else. And so you know, I recommend reading Whole Brain Living, or maybe you could just go with this. But it's still not that next. You know, she talks about being able to make a choice as it informs her life, and that's very important. And I heard yesterday how being able, coming to this juncture with, you know, this so much, you know, physical damage to us, physical and emotional damage to us, coming to that juncture and making a choice. Thank God you did. But there's something else. There's something else. We don't stop there. And so we get a sense of this from what she shared, her experience, when there's absolutely, absolutely no self. What's that like? I'm not encouraging this. You know, we can't, because unless something happens like what happened to Joe Bolte Taylor, you know, or I think that there are maybe momentary experiences like that. And I think that, you know, those momentary experiences, and what maybe drives us to those experiences, is a memory of where we came. I'll read this section to you. Do you mind? And we're back to this word integrate that we heard this. As I noted in chapter one, this journey you are embarking on as you get to know your four characters and learn how to integrate them into your brain team is a mirror of the hero's journey in Joseph Campbell's classic monolith. In addition, it is worth noting that the four characters coincide distinctly with Carl Jung's four major archetypes of the unconscious mind. Character one, the persona. Character two, the shadow. Character two, the shadow. Character three, the animus, anima. And character four, the true self. That would be left or right brain thinking. In this classic story of a hero's journey, the hero heeds the call to leave behind his rational, ego-based consciousness that processes the reality of the external world. In the language of the four characters, the hero must step out of the ego-based consciousness of his character one left brain thinking to enter into the unconscious realm of his right brain. To embark upon this quest, the hero must be willing. To let go of his possessions and wealthy and worldly knowledge and embark on the death of his ego's individuality. To paraphrase Einstein, we must be willing to give up what we are in order to become what we will be. Goes on to say, when we are born, we have no sense of individuality. And our two brain hemispheres are similar in both their structure and in what they value. Over time, however, our left brain cells develop the ability to define the physical boundaries of where we begin and end. And with that identification of self, we gain the ability to perceive ourselves as individuals who are separate from the whole world. It is in those moments that the droplet of our left brain's individual consciousness becomes separate from the sea of cosmic consciousness from which it came. You know, I have a sense that, you know, we don't forget. Some of us don't forget. And I think that not forgetting is, you know, from that time, we've been there before. We've been in no self before. We've experienced this before. We don't have any memory of it because that's before memory started happening. And I think that this is what pulls us back. The sense of Buddhist practice bringing us back home. Coming back home. The sense for me of being pulled back in. But, you know, as she said, in the hero's quest, you know, the hero's quest, what's that going to look like? To leave this behind and then discover. That's the sense that for me of that there's okay, no potential. The dropping, the falling away of conditioning and noticing what's there in that moment, potential. This is the koan dynamic. This is Buddha's point. The falling away of all of this conditioned stuff. And then what's here? What's here? The word not, the mind not resting in words accommodates what arrives. The sense, this is where the sense of creativity in this practice in Zen comes from. It's not some artificial thing. Oh, I'm going to be arty today. I'm going to be cool and hip today. It's a genuine thing. Spontaneous. I'll close with this poem and then some questions that came up for me as a result. Again, from Jane Hirschman. Down the branch. I wanted to be intimate to my own life. What came were the many eating their way through the tree. Night of no wind, the grass littered with unripe apples. The limb fell hard. It was not the weight of the apples, but the many eating, even on the ground, still eating, anonymous and steady. Someone else could name them. Genus, species. Someone else could feel for them affection. I wanted the intimate knowledge they had of the tree. The source. The source. The intimate knowledge of the source. Wanted their simple and ruinous hunger, made without distinction of the lived-in tree. And this came, intimate with hunger, intimate with fear, intimate fill in the blank. So these lists, if you will, these lists becoming intimate with. Intimate with is these things. And so then we can dance.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.